हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति 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 ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay. Page 50. A person who is searching after the supreme absolute truth, the personality of Godhead, must certainly search for it up to this, in all circumstances, in all space and time, and both directly and indirectly. Text 36. In his purport, Srila Prabhupada quotes Srila Jiva Goswami's explanation on the word sarvatra sarvada, in all space and time, and in all circumstances. Srila Jiva Goswami Prabhupada therefore comments on the word sarvatra sarvada in the sense that the principles of bhakti yoga, or devotional service to the Lord, are apt in all circumstances, i.e. bhakti yoga is recommended in all the revealed scriptures. It is performed by all authorities. It is important in all places. It is useful in all causes and effects, etc. As far as all the revealed scriptures are concerned, he quotes from the Skanda Purana on the topics of Brahma and Narada as follows. In the material world, which is full of darkness and dangers, combined with birth and death, right? Darkness and dangers, then there's birth and death. Yeah. And full of different anxieties, the only way to get out of the great entanglement is to accept loving transcendental devotional service to Lord Vasudeva. This is accepted by all classes of philosophers. This is confirmed by Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur.
Yeah. Must certainly search for it up to this.
Means you had the Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan, so up to the Bhagavan level. Like that. Because otherwise, we may search for the Lord here. You know, and how he's entered everything, how he's with them, how he's controlling. You know, there's the judge and karma and everything's working nicely. But we may not search for him up to the point of the personality of Godhead. Right? So that's the aspect. So all times, all places are circumstances. So wherever you start, however you catch the thread, then that's fine. But it should continue up until you get to the supreme personality of Godhead. That's why he mentions the aspect. One who is searching after the supreme absolute truth. Though you have the absolute truth, and the supreme absolute is Bhagavan. Right? The personality of Godhead. Right? So that's the aspect. So all the absolute truth has three aspects, but you have to search all the way up. So that's why when we talk about the Brahman aspect, it's not a difficulty, because we mean it as Brahman, how it's Krishna's effulgence, is there for pervading everything, and in this way everything is getting done. So we're not seeing the effulgence separate from the world. Is that... Okay. This is confirmed by Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur. There are no restrictions of place and time concerning this sadhana. In all places, with all candidates, and at all times, this should be performed with steadiness. However, one must perform karma with purity in a pure place, and one can attain jnana only with a pure mind. Karma and jnana cannot be performed in all places and at all times. The yogi should perform yoga after establishing himself comfortably on a seat in a pure place, Bhagavad Gita 6.11. In terms of time, karma is practiced only until one attains detachment from enjoyment. Yoga is practiced only until one has attained siddhis, Shankhya is performed only until one has attained knowledge. Jnana is performed only until liberation. These methods are not practiced at all times. Bhakti, however, is well known for being practiced at all times and at all places. The practice of bhakti is also applicable to all types of people, including the practitioners of karma and jnana. It is even to be performed by the most fallen by birth or activities. So you're even, the acharya is even taking it here beyond just that I'm applying the specific knowledge together. But it's a matter of that it always goes on. The other ones, only in certain situations you can practice them. You know, so this idea of only if we have this, then we can do devotion or preach. No, it can always be done, wherever it is. Then you can always improve things to expand the preaching. But that can always go on. As long as you're there, you're conscious, the other person you're talking to is conscious, then, you know, hari bo. You know, it can work.
Mark.
Yes.
So according to the statement, this means that the only jiva dharma is bhakti. There's no
yes.
other.
No. Like that. It means that when one is engaging, it means the plethora of pure devotional service, where you're engaging your nature in the Lord's service, then that's what you're trying to do. That's Sanatana Dharma. Because other things, as we see, karma, jnana, yoga are not sanatan, because they can only start with certain circumstances and they will end at when certain things are accomplished. Like that. But bhakti, then it's eternal, so it goes on. So he's even broadened the understanding, you know, here, is that it's not just that I'm being practical in all times, places, and circumstances. It's that, but you can do that eternally. And it is that all time, places, and circumstances, you can apply it. So this idea is that, no, you can't apply bhakti in certain things. No, that's not the philosophy. Philosophy is it can always be applied. You just see which is appropriate for the situation, but can always be applied. And here it also is that practitioner of karma and jnana, there must be purity. But here, it can be even performed by the most fallen, by birth or activities. Either the birth is low, the activities are low, or haribao, bao dharma. Yes. In this connection, Srila Prabhupada explains, therefore, there is no need to seek properly qualified candidates for discharging devotional service to the Lord. Let them be either well-behaved or ill-trained. Let them be either learned or fools. Let them be either grossly attached or in the renounced order of life. Let them be liberated souls or desirous of salvation. Let them be inexpert in the discharge of devotional service or expert in the same. All of them can be elevated to the supreme position by discharging devotional service under the proper guidance. This is also confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 9:30-32. So it really comes down to the guidance. Who can guide them? Who can deal? We see Prabhupada can deal with a wide range, right? Everybody who came to Krishna consciousness, you know, and they fit all these definitions, he was able to deal with, right? So devotional service is applicable. So as a mission, then that's the mandate. Then whoever is comfortable in dealing with which group, then works. And it all works, it all goes nicely. Yes.
What's the difference between liberation and salvation?
No, it means here is that those who are liberated or those who are desiring to be liberated.
So
yes, salvation and liberation are the same. Srila Prabhupada concludes his purport on the Chaturshloki as follows. Yes. Oh, yes. Okay, even if a person is fully addicted to all sorts of sinful acts, if he happens to be engaged in the loving transcendental service of the Lord under proper guidance, he is to be considered the most perfect holy man without a doubt. And thus, any person whatsoever and whosoever he or she may be, even the fallen woman, the less intelligent laborer, the dull mercantile man, or even a man lower than all these, can attain the highest perfection of life by going back home, back to Godhead, provided he or she takes shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord in all earnestness. This sincere earnestness is the only qualification that can lead one to the highest perfectional stage of life. And unless and until such earnestness is aroused, there is a difference between cleanliness and uncleanliness, learning or non-learning in the material estimation. Right. So when that's only desire is for Krishna consciousness, right? Then you don't worry about all these distinctions, right? So that's the point. Is this actually has that universal element that you can apply to everybody? Does that make sense? Because we have to remember, if the qualification for devotional service is your ability to have a good pair of new chinos, not everybody can take part. Like that. So you restrict Krishna consciousness. So this is that, all these things, that earnestness is the thing. But we'll say, no, if this happens, or that, this external or that external, then they can't be devotees, they can't be sincere. But actually, sincerity has nothing to do with these others. With time, that sincerity is consistent in the proper association. Then you will see all the good qualities will manifest. But if we're making a thing, no, bhakti is coming from good qualities, then we're mistaking it to be just another world religion. We're not dealing with actual dharma, because we're talking about bhakti is based on the material qualification. But it's not, it's based on the qualification of the soul. So if the soul is interested, then it works. Right? Now, why Prabhupada here is not worried, because if you continue, naturally as you become purified, then all these nice qualities will manifest. And you won't see them manifesting all these, fallen, position, dull position, attached position, all these things, they'll go away. Yes?
I don't know what you said, souls are all Krishna conscious and liberated.
They're all God conscious, not Krishna conscious. Exactly. They're all God conscious, but they're an illusion. In other words, they're conscious of the facts about God, but they're an illusion that they don't know it's God. Is that?
Their desire. So the whole point is the desire.
Yes.
But it's not coming from the God consciously liberated soul, it comes from the conditioning.
Which?
If all souls by default are God conscious.
No, but it's not conditioning. Conditioning is how you perceive it. Just like you have the light and it's shining through the window. And there's different colors of glass and like that. So at one point you say the light is yellow or the light is green. No, the light's pure. But it's coming through the conditioning. So the living entity, because they identify with the conditioning, that's what you see.
Mm-hmm. So the point of desire.
Desire, yes.
So each individual can have this desire, but the difference is the eagerness, how
yes.
eager they are.
Yes,
so
yes.
So this eagerness is coming from the soul.
Coming from the soul, not from conditioning.
And we say that all souls are God conscious.
Yes.
So they should have all the same eagerness if it's coming.
No, because what is their concept of God?
Okay, different.
Yes. So in other words, how you say, for one, God is their Mercedes-Benz. For another, it's their child. For another, it's having enough money in the bank for labor.
That's conditioning.
That's conditioning, but does this piece of tin with rubber, can it attract the attention of the soul? No, so then what's there? It's Krishna's potency. So they're attracted by Krishna's potency. So they're not attracted by God as a person, or even understanding of super soul, or even Brahman. They don't know. They're attracted by Krishna's qualities, but they don't know that that's what it is. That's what we meant by illusion. The fact is what everybody's attracted to is Krishna. But in illusion, they all think it's the material world. You understand? So Krishna is the material world, therefore they're attracted to it. Right? But he's not interested in that reciprocation because they don't know it's him. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's what we're making. So by association, then we start to see there's a person behind all this, and that's actually what we're attracted to. then that becomes Krishna consciousness. See, we don't call it that the people are God conscious, because in their mind they're not. Right? But the fact is it's the soul who's conscious, not the gross and subtle body. And the soul can only be conscious of transcendence. So they're conscious of the Lord, but in illusion, they think that that transcendence is the external energy. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's what's happening. So the point is, the sense everything is Krishna. That means at all times, all places, and all circumstances, you can remember Krishna and be engaged in devotional service. So this idea is that you have to have a perfect situation. So it's like the yoga studio. What does it have to be?
Quiet.
Beautiful. Queen, beautiful. You know, if it's there right on, you know, Fifth Avenue with the windows open and that, you know, and everything coming in and all the, you know, it's probably not many people are going to join your studio. You know? So in other words, you have to spend a lot of time and effort and money to make it so it's suitable for, right? That we can chant, we can read, we can do kirtan, no matter what the situation is. Does that make sense? Yeah. It's just like, okay, let's say the studio is as big as this, you know, inside these columns. How many yogis can you have in here at a time? Right? Not so many. Yeah, that's maximum. But now how many devotees can you stick in here? Yeah, 10 is better.
Because ego is big.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you notice the difference. 20 men, 10 women. And you're including the one running the lessons. So she takes up to these pillars, you know, and then everybody else gets the next.
Yeah, devotees, they can squeeze
in. Yeah, so he can, you know, can stick 100 devotees in here. So that's the point, is that bhakti is not dependent upon these things. Yes. That's another thing, yes.
Someone almost sat in my lap.
Yeah, yeah. There was that little space there. You know, and you have a little space behind you, so you can adjust.
Yeah. So, Bhakti, they have special devotees. They just, their service is to make you, you know, there's no gap in between.
Oh, okay.
They just come and ask you really nicely, and there's no.
Where is that?
In Chopati.
Oh, in Chopati. Oh, okay.
They ask, please.
I wonder if they got that from the Japanese. The Japanese have people that stuff you onto the train.
Yeah. And then you sit, you end up like this.
Yeah, well, yeah. I guess if everyone stood on their head, that would have the least amount of touching the ground.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So, therefore, on the material platform, if something's not clean, you can't actually deal with activities that are elevating. But in devotional service, even if they're not clean, it still will work. Right? It's not that we put out in the advertisement a thing that everybody should Rathi Yatra's on this day. Everyone kindly take a bath and wear clean clothes. You know, of course, that's another thing, but you know, it works despite. You know, just like that, yeah. In this connection, Srila Prabhupada The final conclusion, therefore, is that the glories of the Lord must be always and everywhere proclaimed. One should hear about His glories, one should chant about His glories, and one should always remember His glories, because that is the highest perfectional stage of life. As far as fruit of work is concerned, it is limited to an enjoyable body. As far as yoga is concerned, it is limited to the acquirement of mystic power. Right? As soon as the body is unable to enjoy, its kind of fruit of activities loses its point. Right? As far as empiric philosophy is concerned, it is limited to the attainment of transcendental knowledge. And as far as transcendental knowledge is concerned, it is limited to the attainment of salvation.
Master, first one, I have to report. That also got the meaning that the best you can get from Guru work is an enjoyable moment.
Oh, okay, yeah, also. Yeah. Yeah, that's as good as it gets. Yeah. He's saying that from fruit of work, that the attainment of the results, the best you can get is an enjoyable body. Right? You know, because on the heavenly planets, it's about the enjoyable body. But then, always somebody's body is more enjoyable than yours. You know, so there's always a problem. And then the ones that have the best enjoyable body aren't interested in enjoying. You know, like Narad Muni or... Yeah. Even if they are adopted, there is every chance of discrepancies in discharging the particular type of functions. But adoption of the transcendental devotional service of the Lord has no limit, nor is there fear of falling down. The process automatically reaches the final stage by the grace of the Lord. Right? So these terms automatic means you have that sincerity, that earnestness, and it will automatically reach, because by Krishna's grace, then it will happen. Right? But it's not that automatic means we do nothing. It means you work in Krishna consciousness as given by the acharyas to please Krishna, then it will automatically get you the result. Yes?
What's the meaning of not fear from falling down?
Because it's not lost.
Okay.
You know, because the other ones, unless it's perfect, unless you get the complete... unless you come to the perfection of it, you don't get any perfection. It's not that you're halfway through jnana that you get anything. You don't get anything until you've gotten transcendental knowledge. You know, and then that knowledge you only that cultivated only until you get liberation. Otherwise, you know, there's no such thing as half liberated. You know, the cake is half baked. You know, it's not. You know, it's not any better than unbaked. You know. You understand?
Yeah.
So that's the problem with the material. So is that it will always be lost. Plus, at the same time, is that the devotional... Yeah, so the devotional service won't be lost. So generally speaking, one won't end up in the... out of the human species. Like that.
This king was hot liberated, and he was stuck in the room.
Well, that was the heavenly planet. No, so it wasn't exactly, you know, yeah. No. Yes.
All right, this automatically reach, which could be understood through the discussion in the morning, focus and the heavenly planets and Krishna.
Yes. So that's the point. If those are there, you know, that's authorized, you will get the result. Because it's what Krishna wants, right? So therefore that'll happen. That's why the process is given. It's not that the process is depending upon us. It's Krishna's process. We just have to take part in it. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like you have, some kind of thing that you open the top, put it in the bottle, add water and give it a mix, and then you have the preparation. So it's not that we made that whole process. You know, it's not we were sitting there and in meditation came up with this, and then, you know, this bag suddenly, you know, manifest in the air, and then, you know, then we wake up, take the bag, and then we make, you know. No, it's Krishna's system. Right? So if we follow it, it'll work. But we have to show that we're enthusiastic, because he's enthusiastic, so how will we take part if we're not enthusiastic? Right? You're going to play a game, and you know there's somebody who's not enthusiastic, doesn't want to take part, doesn't want to follow the rules, doesn't want to cooperate, then how fun is it? Right? So then, yeah. In the preliminary stage of devotional service, there is an apparent requisite for knowledge. But in the higher stage, there is no necessity of such knowledge. That was the morning question.
Yeah.
The best and guaranteed path of progression is therefore engagement in bhakti yoga, pure devotional service. Right? The prerequisite is only because by having that knowledge, then you will actually stick to the path. But the point is it's sticking to the path that's important. Right? So if you see that people are leaving due to lack of knowledge, then better they have knowledge. They won't go away. Understand? So it's not that devotional service requires the knowledge. It's we require it. Right? The cream of Srimad Bhagavatam in the foregoing four shlokas is sometimes squeezed out by the impersonalists for different interpretations in their favor. But it should be carefully noted that the four shlokas were first described by the Personality of Godhead himself. And thus, the impersonalist has no scope to enter into them because he has no conception of the Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the impersonalist may squeeze out any interpretations from them, but such interpretations will never be accepted by those who are taught in the disciplic succession from Brahma, as will be cleared up in the following verses. Besides that, the Shruti confirms that the Supreme Absolute Truth, Personality of Godhead, never reveals himself to anyone who is falsely proud of his academic knowledge. The Shruti mantra clearly says, Katha Upanishad 1.2.23, Nayam atma pravachanena labhyo, Named haya na bahuna shrutena, Yam evaisha vrinute tena labhyas, tas yaisha atma vrinute tanum slam. The whole matter is explained by the Lord himself, and one who has no approach to the Lord in his personal feature can rarely understand the purport of Srimad Bhagavatam without being taught by the Bhagavatas in the disciplic succession. But so again, comes back, it's association. That's the so preaching means somehow or another to give association. That's the real point. And give people opportunity to come in contact with Krishna and Krishna consciousness. And that's the real point. After summarizing himself, the absolute truth in four verses, the Lord told Brahma that if he acted on these understandings, he would be free from pride. 37. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, how is it possible for me to understand the deep meaning of these four verses summarizing the Bhagavatam? There are many options among those who argue. Okay, that's Brahma. Undertake my directions completely. This means contemplate this with concentration. In the Mahakalpa lasting your lifetime, Kalpa, and its subdivisions, you will not be bewildered at any time. Here ends the summer commentary on the four verses. The Sarartha Darshini commentary written for the benefit of humanity should be seen by persons studying devotional literatures and not others.
Sarartha Darshini is Vishwanatha Kalpa?
Appears to be.
Yes.
You thought someone else would? No? They all have their different names. Like that. You know, like Jiva Goswami, there's Krama Sundarva. Like that. So each one has his, you know, like ours is the Bhaktivedanta Purports. That's the name of the commentary. Like that. So like that. Verses 38 to 46. The Lord departs and Brahma recreates the universe. Sukadev Goswami tells Maharaj Pariksit that the Lord, after imparting these four verses to Brahma, disappeared. Then Brahma recreated the universe as it was previously. In answer to Pariksit's question about the teachings of Narada, this question was asked in Srimad Bhagavatam 2.8.1. Sukadev says that Narada later questioned Brahma about the energies of Vishnu. Brahma answered Narada by expanding the four shlokas that he had heard from the Lord into the 10 topics of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Narada in turn instructed the same to Vyas. 38 to 46. No, the 10 topics here are just the 10 topics of a Purana. The Dasa Mool, that's included in the Chatur Shloki. Okay. That's already there. Because you're hearing about Krishna, Krishna's energy, Krishna's relationship, right? The nature of the living entity, achinta veda veda tattva, devotional process, and the ultimate goal. So that's all in the tattva shloka. In his purport to verse 40, Srila Prabhupada stresses that one cannot be situated in an exalted position without having undertaken a regulative life of rules and regulations. An unrestricted life of sense gratification is animal life. And Lord Brahma, in order to teach all concerned with the jurisdiction of his generations, taught the same principles of sense control for executing higher duties. He desired the welfare of all as servants of God. And anyone desiring the welfare of the members of his family and generations must conduct a moral religious life. The highest life of moral principles is to become a devotee of the Lord, because a pure devotee of the Lord has all the good qualities of the Lord. On the other hand, one who is not a devotee of the Lord, however qualified he may be in the mundane sense of the term, cannot be qualified with any good quality worthy of the name. The pure devotees of the Lord, like Brahma and persons in the chain of disciplic succession, do not do anything to instruct their subordinates without acting accordingly themselves. Right? So here's the balance to it, because otherwise you say, oh, it doesn't matter the position. But the point is, it's an unrestricted life. So the point is someone who's coming from a background of an unrestricted life, then when they take up Krishna consciousness, what are they naturally going to do? Right? They're going to start regulating their life. But the idea is that, no, I can continue living an unregulated life, and that's fine in devotional service. That's not going to work. Because the point is that person, let's say, who's new to devotional service, that is, you know, from low background and low activities. The thing is even if they're continuing those activities, are they connecting that? Are they thinking about that in terms of Krishna consciousness? No. They're seeing that they're chanting, they like to read, they like taking prasad at the temple, and then they just live their life as they've always lived. So their focus is on the devotional process. Now with association, with time, then they see bhajana kriya, that there is a recommended lifestyle that will keep one always in that position of will support being Krishna conscious. Right? Because we're the ones that are distracted by passion and ignorance. So therefore, if we have a life of goodness, then we're not so distracted. Right? You understand? It's not that devotional service requires the mode of goodness, because devotional service is practiced in pure goodness. Goodness is not good enough, but at least goodness doesn't distract you with passion and ignorance. Right? So then, from goodness, it's much easier to go to pure goodness. No? Brahma underwent severe austerities in bhakti yoga, and as a result, the Lord awarded him the greatest boon. Brahma, in turn, passed down the same boon to his sons. In his commentary to verses 41 and 42, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains that Narada was Brahma's dearest son. Rikta means inheritance. Rikta dana means a son who inherits the wealth of the father. Narada was the dearest son of Brahma. Among the wealth of karma yoga, jnana yoga, and bhakti yoga belonging to Brahma, Daksha and others obtained karma yoga. The Kumaras attained jnana yoga. Narada obtained bhakti yoga. Because of his outstanding qualities, anuvrata means that he was devoted to his father. Right? So means that, you know, knowledge is the wealth of the Brahmins here. So then Brahma is giving these. But Daksha and others, they took karma. The Kumaras took jnana, and Narada took bhakti. Srila Prabhupada elaborates. The process of understanding spiritual or transcendental knowledge from the realized person is not exactly like asking an ordinary question from the schoolmaster. The schoolmasters in the modern days are paid agents for giving some information, but the spiritual master is not a paid agent, nor can he impart instruction without being authorized. In the Bhagavad Gita 4:34, Arjuna was advised to receive transcendental knowledge from the realized person by surrender. Oh, by surrender, questions, and service. Right, because that's the... It means pranipata, pariprashna, and sevaya. So there's that surrender. Pranipata means that there was desire to know. Therefore, there's surrender. Then you ask questions, then you apply it. Receiving transcendental knowledge is not like exchanging dollars. Such knowledge has to be received by service to the spiritual master. As Brahmaji received the knowledge directly from the Lord by satisfying him fully, similarly, one has to receive the transcendental knowledge from the spiritual master by satisfying him. The spiritual master's satisfaction is the means of assimilating transcendental knowledge. One cannot understand transcendental knowledge simply by becoming a grammarian. The Vedas declare, Svetasvatara Upanishad 6.23, only under one who has unflinching devotion to the Lord and the spiritual master does transcendental knowledge become automatically revealed. Such relationship between the disciple and the spiritual master is eternal. One who is now the disciple is the next spiritual master. And one cannot be a bona fide and authorized spiritual master unless he has been strictly obedient to his spiritual master. Brahmaji, as a disciple of the Supreme Lord, received the real knowledge and imparted it to his dear disciple, Narada. And similarly, Narada, as a spiritual master, handed over this knowledge to Vyas, and so on. Therefore, the so-called formal spiritual master and disciple are not facsimiles of Brahma and Narada, or Narada and Vyas. The relationship between Brahma and Narada is reality, while the so-called formality is the relation between the cheater and the cheated. It is clearly mentioned herewith that Narada is not only well-behaved, meek, and obedient, but also self-controlled. One who is not self-controlled, specifically in sex life, can become neither a disciple nor a spiritual master. Right? So here's, we generally try to apply it more on the spiritual master side, but it's both. It means the process doesn't work unless there's control. Right? Then the whole process works nicely. One must have the disciplinary training in controlling, speaking, anger, the tongue, the mind, the belly, and the genitals. One who has controlled the particular senses mentioned above is called a Goswami. Without becoming a Goswami, one can become neither a disciple nor a spiritual master. Again, so we take that, oh, that means on this side, the spiritual master has to be perfect. You know, the preacher is perfect in that, but I'm allowed to be whatever I am, and everyone's just got to accept me the way I am. Right? But the point is here, no, it doesn't work either way, because the point, why it's brought up here is that the who's the disciple now becomes the spiritual master later. So otherwise, how is it going to work? Right? It can be that, you're not doing it nicely as the disciple, and then suddenly it'll become perfect when you're a spiritual master. No, because you're doing it properly as a disciple, therefore then you become the spiritual master. The so-called spiritual master without sense control is certainly the cheater. And the disciple of such so-called spiritual master is the cheate. Right? So here you have the shlemiel and the shlemah. Yeah. Okay. Then we have the vritti. Oh, it's not four vrittis, it's four parts of one vritti. Aha. Okay. So, vritti. Chapter 9 as a primer in Bhagavad philosophy. Because right? The primer, it's the basic. That everything is based on. That's why technically what we've been discussing, the last, so many years has all been based on this chapter. Does that make sense? Because we've always talked about the Chakra Shloki, Shankar Shampajumna Anirudha Vasudev, Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana. Right? So it's all based on this chapter. This is the basis of the whole thing. Because Gita, being the ABCs, is simply presenting the same thing. Having examined this chapter as we normally do in our study guide, we shall now go back to re-examine certain aspects of this chapter to vitalize our appreciation of its importance within Srimad Bhagavatam as a whole. In this section of the study guide, we shall pay particular attention to Chapter 9, as a theological primer, that is, as an introduction to the Bhagavat religion, both in precept and example. As precept, chapter 9 outlines for our easy comprehension the pure Vedic doctrine. As example, it immerses us in the pure Vedic system of education, the tradition of Sri Guru Parampara. Sri Krishna is the original spiritual master, and in this universe, Brahma Dev is his original disciple. Their interaction in these roles is evident from verse 4. In verse 38, the Lord disappears from Brahma's sight. Thereafter, Brahma assumes in his turn the responsibility of acting as Narada Muni's spiritual master. The Chaturshloki Bhagavat, verses 33 to 36, is the celebrated centerpiece of the chapter as a whole. But other features of this chapter warrant our special attention as well. So let us now turn to chapter 9 to assist one another in following more clearly how it conveys the fundamentals of Bhagavat Dharma. Below, through series of outlined headings, you will find a clear, concise encapsulation of the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Each of these essentialist remarks is an original composition of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. In fact, he composed them for a letter dated March 14, 1969. He did not compose them as a formal comments on Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam, yet these sentences so perfectly represent the fundamentals of Bhagavat Tattva as presented in this chapter that the compiler of this study guide felt impelled to extract them from Prabhupada's letters and arrange them into the outline that follows. It will not be a great intellectual challenge for any student to connect the points of this outline to specific verses and purports in Chapter 9, Canto 2. God is the Supreme Lord. This sentence, composed by Srila Prabhupada for a letter of 1969, goes straight to the heart of the point of verse 33. After reading it, we may have a new look at the following portion of His Divine Grace's purport of 33. Reading it, the significance of God as the Supreme Lord, particularly as a clarification of the word Adham, which appears thrice in the verse, becomes obvious, if it was not already. Srila Prabhupada comments, right? Because God is the Supreme Lord, because otherwise people will say Brahman is God, or my, you know, how you say, Eric Clapton is God, or, you know, so many different things that they're going to say, right? But the point is that it's God is the Supreme, right? The Supreme Lord of the person, because he says, me, aham, right? That's the point. He says he points at himself and says, I. Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 33. Srila Prabhupada's comment to verse 33 states, the impersonalist puts forth the theory of oneness in the sense that Brahma, also being the same principle of I, because he is an emanation from the I, the absolute truth is identical with the Lord. The principle of I, and there is thus nothing more than the principle of I, is explained in this verse. Accepting the argument of the impersonalist, it is to be admitted that the Lord is the creator I, and the Brahma is the created I. Therefore, there's a difference between the two I's, namely the predominator I and the predominated I. Therefore, there are still two I's, even accepting the argument of the impersonalist. Right? Because otherwise, that's another way of dealing with it, is that someone takes... They come up with that. You just take their essential point and then show how it still maintains our philosophy. All they're doing is saying this to cover up, because the point is, as if there's the Supreme Lord and there's the Brahma, how are they going to be the same? But they just say it's all the same, and so then we just make that step. Just like we say, okay, if I buy, you know, hey, say, you know, a house in the Bahamas, I'll be happy. But how will we be happy? What's the steps? What's the mechanics? Why should it work? It's a house, you know, it's got all the difficulties that any house anywhere else in the world has. You know, like that. And there, your neighbors aren't a kilometer away, at least, like they are in Sweden. You know, so... You understand? So the whole idea is that they make that step of faith. But their faith is not properly placed. 33. This is an example of the fourth stage of Panchanganyaya, Upanyaya, further explanation, right? So
where you take theirs and synthesize it into yours. Even you take theirs, we can explain it, so it's still our philosophy. They just can't see that. They're not seeing it in the fullest. So that's the whole point.
The living entities are qualitatively one with God. Or in other words, living entities and God are only one in quality, but by quantity, God is great, from the same purport. The creator I and the created I are both accepted in the Vedas as qualitatively one, because both of them are nityas and chaitanas, right? So eternal and conscious. But the singular I is the creator I, and the created I's are a plural number, because there are many I's, like Brahma, and those generated by Brahma, so the Elohim and the Echad, right? So, it is the simple truth. The Father creates or begets a son, and the Son also creates many other sons. And all of them may be one as human beings, but at the same time, from the Father, the Son, and the grandsons are all different. The Son cannot take the place of the Father, nor can the grandsons.
So easy, you probably explain.
Yeah, well, that's the whole point. It is easy. As such, the living entities are eternal servitors and subordinate of God, maintained by the Supreme Lord. This relationship is eternal. Therefore, time is also eternal. The same purport of verse 33 continues to shed light upon this commentary taken from Srila Prabhupada's letter. Right, so, you know, we're going along in here. So he says, God is the Supreme Lord. The living entities are qualitatively one with God. As such, the living entities are eternal servitors and subordinate of God, maintained by the Supreme Lord. Okay, so these are the points he's making. So these are very nice if you want to use, you know, techniques of presentation. Then these will work, and here's your explanations. This conclusion refutes the conclusion of the impersonalist that in the ultimate issue everything is impersonal. This impersonal feature, stressed by the less intelligent impersonalist school, is refuted by pointing out that the predominator, I, is the absolute truth, and that he is a person. The predominator, I, Brahma, is also a person, but he is not the absolute. For realization of oneself in spiritual psychology, it may be convenient to assume oneself to be the same principle as the absolute truth, but there is always a difference of the predominated and the predominator. As clearly pointed out here in this verse, which is grossly misused by the impersonalists. Brahma is factually seeing face to face his predominator, Lord, who exists in his transcendental eternal form, even after the annihilation of the material creation. The form of the Lord, as seen by Brahma, existed before the creation of Brahma. And the material manifestation with all the ingredients and agents of material creation are also energetic expansions of the Lord. And after the annihilation of the Lord's energy comes to a close, what remains is the same personality of Godhead. So his energies are manifesting all that. Even if they're not manifest, the energies remain. He remains. It's just what's manifest. Does that make sense? And it's just like the mom cooks dinner, right? And then everybody eats the dinner, but it's, the mom still exists even after the dinner is no longer existing. Right?
She can cook again.
Yes, otherwise, yeah. Yeah, we're not talking about cannibal society here. There are two kinds of natures, the spiritual nature and the material nature. Material nature is temporary, and spiritual nature is permanent. Material nature is simply temporary manifestation within the jurisdiction of spiritual nature. Right? So there is the spiritual nature, and then there's a jurisdiction that the material nature manifests. It's not technically a separate realm. It's still functioning within the realm of the spiritual. Right? Because we tend to make it, because of our dualistic mentality, as two different things, right? But it's still, the material manifestation is happening within the jurisdiction of the spiritual. So that area that it does happen, that's called Mahatattva. Right? Mm-hmm.
Yes. Because we see the Lord comes, his great devotees come. You know, yes.
This path of principles pointed is very similar to the thematic study of the Gita, the Samvanda part of the Gita.
Yes. No, because it's the author's the same. His Prabhupada wrote that thematic study of Gita. You know, that's what's so unique, really, is that he went through and made all these points like that. So this would be just be a shorter form of it. You know, so because it's that you're going to have on each verse, so then you have all those four parts. And so then,
so perfect. One leads to the other, right?
Yes, each one leads to another, but it means, but still, it's one has to be able to appreciate how that works. And how important, how significant that is. Because we'll just say, of course. But then when you talk to the karma stuff, no, you just go through these. And they'll appreciate. This summary applies to verse 34. The following expert from the purport makes the fact obvious. In the previous verse, it has already been concluded that in any stage of the cosmic manifestation, its appearance, its sustenance, its growth, its interactions of different energies, its deterioration and disappearance, all has its basic relation with the existence of the personality of Godhead. So that was about existence. Right? So the Lord exists as a person, the living entities exist as people. Right? The Lord has qualities, the living entity has same qualities. So God has unlimited, the living entity has a small amount. And God is the predominator, and the living entities are predominated. Okay, so that's all established nicely there. And then the material natures within. Oh, that's coming in this one. Right. One could say, why would you say no, but they're separate? Then why is it the Lord and all the great devotees come here, but we don't see the materialists going there? In fact, there's tridents just to make sure. Yeah. All has its basic relation with the existence of the personality of Godhead. And as such, whenever there is forgetfulness of this prime relation with the Lord, and whenever things are accepted as real without being related to the Lord, that conception is called a product of the illusory energy of the Lord. So it's real without relation with the Lord. So it's not that it's not real, but the reality, one sees it without connection with the Lord, that's an illusion. You know, it's just like I go into somebody's house, Elsa's house, and I don't see the relationship between that house and the person and the owner. And so I use the house as I like. That's illusion. Right? Someone else is in the house. They see it in relationship to the owner, so they use it properly in connection how the owner would be comfortable. That's actual reality. Right? But they're both working with the same house. You know, same house, same refrigerator, you know, same television, same couch. Right? But how they're dealing is very different. Because nothing can exist without the Lord, it should be known that the illusory energy is also an energy of the Lord. The right conclusion of dovetailing everything in relation with the Lord is called Yoga Maya, or the energy of union. And the wrong conception of detaching a thing from the relationship with the Lord is called the Lord's Daivi Maya, or Mahamaya. Both the Mayas have connections with the Lord because nothing can exist without being related to Him. As such, the wrong conception of detaching relationships from the Lord is not false, but illusory. Right? So, our interaction with it is not false, it's actually going on, but it's illusory. So the facts are there, but it's illusory because we don't include the Lord as part of the facts. So in other words, we're dealing with the facts, but only part of them. When we deal with the Lord, that's complete. Because the idea is that in verse 34, it's about whatever's connected to the Lord is real, and what's not is illusory. Right? So whatever we value, because it's what we value, is what we do. We don't do something we don't value. The living entities, somehow or another, being entrapped by material nature, are meeting all kinds of material conditions.
His birth, death, old age, and diseases are due to his contact with this material nature. Yeah, something interesting. Because we always use birth, death, old age, and disease. Though technically you go birth, disease, old age, death. Right? Yeah, but birth and death, that kind of sums it up, what's going on. Then you add on to that old age and disease for, you know, for fun. Okay, his birth, death, old age, and diseases are due to his contact with this material nature. The living entities are evolving different kinds of material body, numbering 8,400,000 different forms. Footnote 34. Here, Srila Prabhupada paraphrases Bhagavad Gita 13.22. The living entity in the material nature thus follows the ways of life, enjoying the three modes of nature. This is due to his association with that material nature. Thus he meets with good and evil among various species. This summary applies to the conclusion of verse 34 as evident from this excerpt from the purport. Being the reflection of the Lord, the existence of the living entity is dependent on the Supreme Lord, who is the original light. The material energy may be compared to darkness, as actually it is darkness, and the activities of the living entity in the darkness are reflections of the original light. The Lord should be understood by the context of this verse. Non-dependent on of both, the energies of the Lord is explained as maya or illusion. No one can make a solution of the darkness of ignorance simply by the reflection of light. Similarly, no one can come out of material existence simply by the reflected light of the common man. One has to receive the light from the original light itself. The reflection of sunlight in the darkness is unable to drive out the darkness, but the sunlight outside the reflection can drive out the darkness completely. In darkness, no one can see the things in a room. Therefore, a person in dark is afraid of snakes and scorpions, although there may be not such things. But in the light, the things in the room can be clearly seen, and the fear of snakes and scorpions is at once removed. Therefore, one has to take shelter of the light of the Lord, as in the Bhagavad Gita or the Srimad Bhagavatam. Right. So that's actually going to get the benefit. Then one is following, as I say. One's connecting everything to the Lord. So because the Lord, it's all the Lord's energy. By doing that, one's under the internal potency. So then one becomes fearless. Right? Fear comes because of not being connected with the Lord. Fearlessness comes by being connected to the Lord. The human form is a great opportunity for the living entity to understand God. The living entity, time, nature, and different activities. The material activities are temporary. Therefore, if the living entities are trained to transform his activities from material to spiritual, he regains his original spiritual nature. The excerpted portion of the purport of verse 35 is most appropriate here. In the developed stage of consciousness, the human being can study both physiological and physical science. But the basic principles of such sciences are nothing but the material elements and nothing more. The body of the human being and the body of the mountain is also the bodies of the demigods, including Brahma, are all of the same ingredients, earth, water, etc. And at the same time, the elements are beyond the body. The elements were created first, and therefore they entered into the bodily construction later. But in both circumstances, they entered the cosmos and also did not enter. Similarly, the Supreme Lord, by his different energies, namely the internal and external, is within everything in the manifested cosmos, and at the same time is outside of everything, situated in the kingdom of God, Vaikuntha Loka, as described before. Right? So, in engaging everything in the Lord's service, that means that which is he has entered, you're engaging in the service of the Lord who has not entered. Right? Does that make sense? No. The Lord creates, expands, it creates the universe, and he enters that through his energies and his paramatma. So that we take and engage in the service of the Lord who has not entered. In other words, Bhagavan.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah.
So that's what we're doing. Because what we're taking here, what we're dealing with here, this is Brahman Paramatma. We're taking this and engaging in the service of Bhagavan.
So on contrary, in the spiritual world, it's all personal. It's all Bhagavan aspect.
Yes, it's all. Because it's directly the Lord's energies. So there, because that can be appreciated, but because you're the intensifying the aspect of the personal and the personal relationship. Here we're emphasizing the element of God. We're opening with that. God is the Supreme Lord. Right? So that knowledge has its position, but then once you get up to the platform of liberation, then it's not as important. So in Vaikuntha, a little bit of that's left, so they appreciate the greatness of the Lord and His opulence. But it's still about the loving relationship. But then in Braj, that's even covered more by Yogamaya. So even that he's the supreme, they're not worried about it. Right? So the thing of the personality is there. So it's true, all the energies is Balaram Govardhan's hills, him, right? Radhakunda's Radharani. Right, how you say it? Vishakha Devi is Jamuna. But you don't really think about it like that so much, because then that gets in the way of just that loving relationship. Right? Vaikuntha, it's still okay. But in Braj, not so much. Is this that? Well, here it's kind of necessary to think in that way, because otherwise we'll think that we're God and the controller of everything. You know, I created this pool. No, the guys down at the shop who you made the contract with, they made the pool. You know. So there's always that little bit of illusion. And after such achievements, he is promoted to the spiritual world, which is far beyond this visible material sky. All these understandings are based on authentic Vedic knowledge. Footnote 35. The above quoted 6 points follow the Dasamul Tattva. Yes.
There seem to be 7 points. Is one of them made into two parts?
There might be, but also it's just like in the wedding ceremony. At the end you say, follow these 7 vows. Right? So the point is, but you count them, there's only 6. So the 7th is that you'll follow them. So that way it becomes its own. Does that make sense? So you have like that sometimes. You know, it's just like following the order of the guru is a principle. But what you're doing is applying the principles that he's given. Does that make sense? So that's the thing. For the acharyas, everything is covered. Like there's no gaps left. There's nothing left for chance, because otherwise, if there is a gap for chance, we will take it. That's the sad part. This comment fits verse 36 as is clear from the citation taken out of Srila Prabhupada's purport to that verse. As long as one is blind to inquiring after self-realization, all material activities, however great they may be, are all different kinds of defeat, because the aim of human life is not fulfilled by such unwanted and profitless activities. Right? As in the second verse, which says that they're all illusion. The function of the human body is to attain freedom from material bondage. But as long as one is fully absorbed in material activities, his mind will be overwhelmed in the whirlpool of matter. And thus he will continue to be encased in material bodies life after life. Right? So the function, so that's the Abhideya, is to be engaged in devotional service. Evam mana karma vasham prayunte avidyayatman yupadhyamane pritir nayavan maivasudeve namuchyate deha yogena tavat. Srimad Bhagavatam 5.5.6. It is one's mind that generates different kinds of bodies for suffering different kinds of material pains. So in other words, we get bored of one way of suffering, we come up with a new way.
Therefore, as long as the mind is absorbed in fruitive activities, the mind is understood to be absorbed in nescience. And thus one is sure to be subjected to material bondage in different bodies again and again, until one develops a transcendental love for Godhead. Vasudeva, the Supreme Person. To become absorbed in the transcendental name, quality, form, activities of the Supreme Person, Vasudeva, means to change the temper of the mind from matter to absolute knowledge, which leads one to the path of absolute realization and thus frees one from the bondage of material contact and engages and encagements in different material bodies.
So when you were saying, what did you count as the seventh?
Well, there were the seven involved points here.
Oh, I see.
Was God is the Supreme Lord. The second one, living at this world, is one with God. And then it says, as such, living at his eternal servant, is a subordinate of God.
Okay.
So seeing the possibility of those two
one,
put together.
Two.
What's that?
Well, it's just showing the results, I think, or how to apply them.
Mm-hmm.
But then you get the Abhideya also.
And the question for this chapter, the inside question. Vritti part one, there are six sections. So I wonder whether what looks like the second or third, where it's the living entity is probably one of God, and that continues as such living entities are eternal servitors. So that's not one point there.
Oh, I see. That could be. Because you're following here the aspects of. Okay, God is the Supreme Lord, so you establish Him as the Supreme. Right? Then you have the aspect of living entities are called a one with God. So then you're talking about His energies. Right? As such, the eternal servant, subordinate of the Lord, maintained by the Supreme Lord. Right? So then you have their position of. Being liberated or bonded, but just the nature of the soul. Two kinds of nature, spiritual and material, so now you've described the energies there again. Like that. The living entity, some are trapped by the material nature, are meeting all kinds of conditions, so that's how they function in there. Human life is opportunity for understanding. So you're talking about the different activities. And then, and after achievements promoted in the spiritual world, your prayojana. So it's just that in that he's bringing out those seven points of Sambandha, right? But putting them together in different aspects.
The last one is Abhideya.
The last verse is Abhideya, but at the same time as he's pointing out the things here. Okay, here. He's from here. The living entity trained to transform the active from material to spiritually regains its original spiritual nature. So that would be. Yet also it appears that these parts that are underlined in the smaller, he has the bold and then the other underlined, you'd have to include them in your to get out of it.
Looks like they're all taken.
Yeah, but from what I can understand is what's being quoted here is the whole letter. And so he's just putting in bold his main point, and then in some of them he's giving details by underlining. So then, Vritti part two.
Mosquito got that?
Yeah, it got squashed. Not sure how. He's really squashed. Okay. Vritti part two. Brahma's qualification as a genuine Brahmana, right? So that last one was then how this chapter is a basis of Bhagavad philosophy. All philosophy goes back to this. Okay? Now, for a third time, we revisit chapter 9. Our purpose is to pay special attention to Brahma's qualification as Sampradaya Acharya. The Supreme Lord addresses Brahma as Veda Garbha, he who is impregnated by the Vedas. This indicates that the potency of Vedic knowledge is made manifest in a rare person by extraordinary tapasya. Such a person is the real Brahmana. Quote, the Lord declares that the Brahminical qualifies, exemplified by the first of the Brahmanas, Sri Brahmadeva, greatly satisfy him, mentioning the vain attempts of the Kuta yogis, pseudo-mystics, to attract his blessings. Sri Krishna dismisses them as useless. Verse 20. The inseparable tapasya from the Veda Garbha status of the genuine Brahmana is underscored in this verse from Canto 5. The Vedas are my eternal transcendental sound incarnation. Therefore, the Vedas are Shabda Brahma. In this world, the Brahmanas thoroughly study all the Vedas. It just struck me as that how this chapter is going so easily, because it being, as Sotomar's pointed out here, is that it being the basis of everything else, in studying all the other things, now we understand this. We see how it works. In this world, the Brahmanas thoroughly study all the Vedas, and because they assimilate the Vedic conclusions, they are also to be considered the Vedas personified. The Brahmanas are situated in the supreme transcendental abode of nature, Sattva-guna. Because of this, they are fixed in mind control, Sama, sense control, Dhamma, and truthfulness, Satya. They describe the Vedas in the original sense, and out of mercy, anugraha, they preach the purpose of the Vedas to all conditioned souls. They practice penance, tapasya, and tolerance, tatiksha. Then they realize the position of the living entity and the Supreme Lord, Anubhava. These are the eight qualifications of the Brahmanas. Therefore, among all living entities, no one is superior to the Brahmanas. Srimad Bhagavatam 5.5.24. Because this is their occupation. For others, this isn't their occupation. If they use it, they do better in their occupation. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Brahma is privileged to see the Lord in his Vaikuntha form. This Chaturbhuj forearm appearance is known as Lord Sri Varesha, who presides over the kingdom of God as the origin of all benedictions. Footnote 36. The forearm form of the Lord that Brahma had initial darshan of is confirmed by Srila Jiva Goswami to be the Lord of Dwarka, right, because that point was made before. Blessed by that supreme person, Brahma is welcomed to any boon he might ask for. The Lord advised Brahma that by obtaining mat darshana, my darshana, he has already achieved Shreya, the ultimate success. Brahma, you know, so he can take any boon, but he's just reminded, you've already got, you know, the perfection. Krishna reminds Brahma that there is no higher penance than hearing. Upashrutya, compare to Upashrini note in verse 6, then read the six purport. In Rahasi, the renounced position, which means to cut off from a satsanga. This quality of hearing exactly that by which Brahmadev satisfied Lord Varesha, enthuses the Lord to bless his devotees with anubhava, divine perception. In turn, the purified senses of the devotee directly apprehend the Lord's personal abodes. Since penance, tapasya, is the Lord's own heart, he and penance are non-different. Krishna informs Brahma that the sound tapa-tapa was his personal order. Quote, by tapasya do I create this cosmos, the Lord tells Brahma. By tapasya do I maintain it, and I withdraw it by the same potency of tapasya. So interesting here is also this point, anubhava, divine perception. So then having a particular relationship with the Lord, right, the staibhav, then seeing the Lord or elements connected to the Lord or the devotees, then one is inspired. And then one will have that perception of the Lord. Right? So that's the anubhava. Right? Then there'll be physical symptoms,
then there'll be mental symptoms or emotional symptoms. Brahma seeks from the Lord's lotus feet the benediction of Abhideya, initiation into the process of devotional service, which for Brahma means engagement in pure devotional service to the Lord's mission of creation.
Right.
Yes.
So why is initiation Abhideya?
Because it's part of the process, because then we're taking the siksha and following it. When you accept the order of the spiritual masters of life and soul, then that means you'll apply it. So then you could take it as Abhideya.
Because usually we think of initiation as in Sambandha.
It has that aspect also, because it's connecting the relationship in this. But the point is then having done, let's say, the initiation ceremony, now is the process, is now it's over. That is the position now. Or is it that following the order is the actual initiation?
Yeah, following is the action.
Yeah, so that, therefore, then you can take from that side, so emphasizing the Abhideya, that's the initiation. Because otherwise he has a relationship with the Lord. But now he wants to be engaged in the service of the Lord. Is that what? That's why there's a difference, but non-difference, between all these positions.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes,
beginning the process, yeah. Okay, because it initiates, yeah. So then now you're maintaining or cultivating the process. Right? Because it's like Vishwambar means the nourishment of the process. Right? So that's the Abhideya aspect. Is that what I'm
saying?
Brahma humbly requests the Lord to unveil for his servant's sake the mystery of how he sports with his creative energy, like a spider unwinds, maintains, and then winds up his web. Right? So he says unwinds because it's already there, and then he just unwinds it so you can see it, because he can wind it back up. It's not that he leaves it. He can take the threads and put, you know, it's like the spider comes down, but when he climbs back up, it's not that you see that there's, you know, this bit hanging down, it disappears. So that's the thing, is the web is already there, it's just a matter of whether it's manifest or not. So therefore, he says, sports with his creative energy. Brahma, desiring to be successful in party karma, his service to the Lord as his empowered agent, the demigod of creation, prays that he may generate living entities without taking part in their material conditioning and without falling victim to the false pride of thinking himself supreme. Let us tarry a while to go over verse 29 with special care. We may note Brahma desires only to be a tandrita, an instrument of action, who is iha manaha, always performing duties assigned him by Sri Krishna. Right, so he wants to be an instrument in what Krishna wants done. Not that he wants to be the Lord or the benefactor of activities he wants to do. Right? At the same time, he fears that as an active instrument of devotional service, he may, quote, be conditioned. Badyayam. This is a form of a word seen more frequently in Srimad Bhagavatam in Chaitanya Charitamrita as Baddha. Baddha means to get into trouble while doing the Lord's work. The Bhagavatam refers us to a thrilling narrative in Chapter 5 of Canto 8 to illustrate how such misfortune does befall devotees. In verse 15, the word Badyamana is employed to sum up the many setbacks the demigods suffered at the hands of the demons, all traceable to the curse of Durvasa Muni, whom the David has displeased. Brahma asked Krishna's permission to render him devotional service, free from the embarrassments of such fateful interferences. Right, so in the performance of duty, one may get caught up in something and do something that's not important. In this way, one gets distracted. Yes?
Once you also discussed the front devotional service, a special kind of condition of health. If you're successful,
well, that it means that that's in the Anartas. It mentions that that's the Taranga Rangini. Is that by that consistent, determined practice of devotional service, then it becomes stable and steady. And when it becomes stable, then there's results. And then one might become absorbed in appreciating those results. So does that make sense? So that's a distraction that you have to be careful of.
Is it Brahma is afraid of?
That's what he's worried about. Is that he will think I'm doing this, the results are mine, so I can enjoy them, things like that. So that's the difficulty. That's what I was saying, is much of the time when you see senior devotees getting distracted, they're distracted by that. Well, neophytes, it's the first and second. They can say, no, but he's proud, and he thinks he's doing, but that's what the first stage of anartha nivritti, one learns a little bit and one becomes very proud, thinks I know so much. Right? So we're talking here that on one level it may look they're the same, but they're very different. So we shouldn't just make it all one. And that makes it easy. If you do it like that and say that it's the same as the neophyte, it makes it very easy for me to not deal properly. I can deal how I like. But if it's actually the senior, then I have to deal properly. Even though there's something wrong, it's still, there's respect is there because what has been done and everything. Because devotional service, the external, doesn't actually, devotional service, its maintenance is not dependent on the external, right? In other words, even you give up devotional practice, the devotional service remains. Right? Like that. So that's the whole point, is it's independent. That means devotional services. We're the one that's not independent. Because we're conditioned, therefore unclean situations affect us. If we're pure, unclean situation, like Prahlad Maharaj, is he affected by being born in the family of demons? No. But for others, it is affecting them. Right? All the children in the Gurukul, they've taken on the demoniac mentality. But by association, then they are able to give it up. Okay. Brahma asked Krishna's permission to render him devotional service free from the embarrassments of such faithful interferences. The upgrading of a Mishra Bhakti, a mixed self-interested devotee, to Abhideya Bhakti, unalloyed pure devotional service to Sri Krishna, may take a very long time. Brahma practiced austerity for 1,000 devata years just to be able to ask this blessing from the Lord. Or, by the grace of Krishna, it may be happened in an instant. In any case, the starting point must be the devotee's sambandha conviction. He must have unshakable faith that the constitutional connection of every jivatma as the servant of the eternal master is a reality that never changes, although it may appear disordered due to the ignorance of some jiva souls. Note how expertly His Divine Grace makes this understandable in the upcoming quotation from a class given in Bombay. Just like a servant, if he forgets that there is master, then he becomes polluted. He steals, he mismanages things, things become very disordered. But if he has got the sense that, quote, my master, everything belongs to my master, end quote, and if he acts accordingly, then that is very nice. So we do not know what is the constitutional position of Krishna, and what is my constitutional position. That is called sambandha jnana. My relation with Krishna, every one of us has got a relationship. Bhagavad Gita class, 29th March 1974, Bombay. So you have, you could say like this, let us say, just on addressing your question there. Take the initiation ceremony and divide it into two parts. One, the following of the instructions of the spiritual masters, one's life and soul,
and the commitment to the relationship that you have with the spiritual master and the ritual by which you express that. Right? So the latter would be the sambandha, the former would be the abhideya.
Yeah.
Right? Because you have the element, knowledge is in both places. Right? Because it's always called sambandha gyan, but the chit potency, but that's for us, is the position of existence. So then when we call it chit, meaning the abhideya, then we're saying that knowledge is being applied. So in other words, having understanding the knowledge, or realizing the knowledge, that's your samanda. But applying the knowledge, that's abhideya. Is that?
Yeah.
Okay. So that samanda gyan, therefore, is important, that then we know how to act. Right? It means if we simply see ourselves as servant of Krishna and act like that, then even without great a volume of knowledge, then it will work. Because the point of sambandha gyan is I am servant, Krishna's master. Now, we will say, yes, Krishna's master, I'm servant when I'm in the temple, but when I go home, then I'm the master and everybody else is my servant. Right? So then that's the problem. So therefore, we have to add that aspect of the philosophy. You understand? So wherever it is, or, you know, okay, I have to work with the others, but then in my occupation, or the results of my work, or, does that make sense? So like this, then, you know, right down to our toothbrush, then we need philosophy. Otherwise, there's somehow or another, I am the lord of this toothbrush. You know, I make it brush the upper teeth, I make it brace the lower teeth. You know? Like this. Okay. The student will benefit by reading and rereading such important verses as Srimad Bhagavatam 7.9.41. My dear Lord, you are always transcendentally situated on the other side of the river of death. But because of the reactions of our own activities, we are suffering on this side. Right? We're on this side because we're involved in activities of this world. The Lord is never involved in activities of this world, therefore he's on that side. So that's why even though he enters it, he's not involved with the activities here. Therefore, he's always on that side. Is that? Yeah. Indeed, we have fallen into this river and are repeatedly suffering the pains of birth and death and eating horrible things. Now kindly look upon us, not only upon me, but also upon all others who are suffering. And by your causeless mercy and compassion, deliver us and maintain us. Seventh canto, yeah, must be Prahlada. Because otherwise, everybody else is standing there, so he's including them also in the whole. Because all the demigods, everybody else is standing. And he's, you know, worried about his father. Yeah, because the point is because he has a demoniac mentality, he's suffering. If he realizes he's serving the Krishna, there's no problem. Oh, here it is. Spoken by Sri Prahlad Maharaj. It clearly and concisely transmits the same rendering of Bhagavad philosophy that Srila Prabhupada brings to the fore in the above quotation. Prahlad's verse is quite a gripping insight into the confusion that can overwhelm a poor jiva soul who somehow becomes patitam, fallen down into the bhava, mundane, right? See, this bhava, that's emotion, and bhava means the material. So there's a difference between bhava ananda and bhava ananda, right? So generally we're interested in this bhava ananda, you know, looking forward to bhava ananda. Right now it's bhava, right? Yeah. Falling down the mundane world of old age, disease, death, and rebirth. Morning, noon, and night, this jiva eats only abominable rubbish. Why? Do the powers that be just have it in for the poor fellow? No, as Sri Prahlad points out, our pathetic jiva soul, tiny as it may be, is puffed up with the false delusions of Vaira Maitram. This means enemies and friends.
Therefore, he ends up with all kinds of weird stuff. Oops, look sharp, little fellow. Here comes an enemy right now. A snapping, razor-toothed, fury of a beast who, laying his glittering red eyes upon your skinny little body, now sees in it this morning's breakfast. All right, now go on. Try losing yourself inside a milling crowd of so-called natural allies. But with this ravenous beastie on your tail, how long before some good buddy gives you up to save his own hide? No, that one wasn't that way. The point is that we have the material energy, the modes of nature are going to eat us up, you know. But we're thinking that, you know, no, I have my friends, they'll protect us, right? The family will protect us from death. But at the time of death, they can't do anything, right? That's why the Bhagavatam even has a chapter specifically on this, you know, like that whole. Oh, if all this was just a bad dream, but no, at least it is not a dream for those jivas encaged by the lusty desires of this horrible vigraha, this perishable form of matter they've earned by their karma. No wonder Prahlad describes these fallen souls as bita bitam, scared out of their wits. Yet, at the same time, Sri Prahlad Maharaj assures us that all through this nightmare, the Supreme Lord Krishna sees us all as we actually are, as pure achyuti janam, sons and daughters of the infallible Supreme Personality of Godhead. So he sees like that. He never changes, not because you do something bad, he changes his opinion of it. Right? He still sees the same. It's just that how you deal, you get your results. That's all. The previous section presented us with a bit of cinematic cliffhanger. What's keeping that desperate little spirit soul, Sri Prahlad describes, from taking a firm stand as a Sambandhigyani? We may feel enthused to shout aloud, quote, ignore all those worthless complications thrown at you by the material nature. Come on, spirit soul. Show us by great deeds the fruit of the tattva-gyan you received from Sri Prahlad Maharaj's verse. Ah, but a word of caution is in order. Dear Vaishnavas and Vaishnavis, it is time to learn an extremely important strategic lesson in our Acharya's war against Maya. Sambandhigyan is no doubt required for victory in the overall battle plan, but it may very well not be enough to deliver the tiny soul from the full force of the danger into which he has strayed. Let us therefore review our own statuses in devotional service with clear-eyed caution, to make doubly sure that we ourselves follow the path of Brahmadev's sincerity. Read once more his final query to the Supreme Lord, Srimad Bhagavatam 2930. O my Lord, the unborn, you have shaken hands with me just as a friend does with a friend, as if equal in position. I shall be engaged in the creation of different types of living entities, and I shall be occupied in your service. I shall have no perturbation, but I pray that all this may not give rise to pride, as if I were the Supreme. Right? Because again, remember the Acharya said that pride is the beginning of all other things. If pride is there, then bad qualities can come in. If there's no pride, the bad qualities don't enter. The Supreme Lord begins his reply with a cautionary note that the Chaturmukha Devata asked for now is actually the most confidential teachings of the Vedic scriptures. Footnote 37. Hence, even though Brahma was already Vedic Garbha, and even realized by Kunta, this jnana parama guhyam that Krishna speaks of now is superior to Brahma jnana, and the concomitant five kinds of liberation that Brahma previously achieved by penance. Such confidential knowledge is the fruit of vigyan, or realization by means of mature devotional service, in which the paraphernalia the devotee utilizes to serve the Lord is known to be given by him alone. Right. So in other words, we want to do devotional service, but the facility for it is coming from the Lord also. Indeed, that paraphernalia is not different from him. Lord Krishna now blesses Brahma by awakening in him the tattva-jnana, factual realization of his original form, qualities and activities as the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
As Govinda, the Adi Purusha, adored by the eternal residents of Chintamani Dhamma, Goloka Vrindavan, it is only by causeless mercy, mat anugrahat, that such pure Krishna consciousness is imparted. So this is the thing, he sees the Lord, the forearm form of the Lord, then he reveals the spiritual realm, it expands his understanding. Then he's able to see Krishna in Goloka.
And then after that, he compiles that.
Brahma Samhita. Yeah, so this is done after.
So. Revelation of the Kali Bija and Kali Bhakti, that would be before he sees Krishna.
Yes, he's gotten all these mantras, basically. Or it can be that. See, the Gopal mantra he gets before. Then by meditating, then he's able to see the Lord. Right? He does his meditation. Then after that, then he's initiated by Krishna's flute, which is the Kama Gaya. Like that.
Kama Bija. Yes.
So that's the... That's one process you can use. That sometimes, along with the name they give that the Gopal mantra. Some do that. It's not a standard thing, but some do that. Then by doing that, then it helps in the chanting. But the thing is then you have to be quite qualified. Brahma is a Brahman, so then it will work. Because being a, you know, within that pancharatic realm, you have to have qualification to be able to utilize it. So you can't just use it for anybody. You can't use it as a general process of initiation. Therefore, then, I say mantra comes after that development of, you know, you're situated nicely as seeing I'm servant of the Lord, that the material world is nothing to gain, and that upward path to the Lord is the actual process. Then, if that's situated and stable, then having mantra and worshiping the deity have meaning. But if not, then it doesn't. So that's why the general rule we don't use like that. But Brahma, because of his qualification as a Brahmana, he's able to take advantage and use the Gopal mantra in that meditation. Does that make sense? So it should never be thought of that this is, you know, why don't we do it like this? Yes?
Yes.
Stop here.